Welcome to one of Health Education Corporation's lectures. Dr. Richard Brouse is a chiropractic physician in private practice who holds a master's degree in biochemistry and is certified in clinical nutrition. Since 1977, he has been treating patients with many health concerns using nutrition, exercise, stress management, natural therapeutics, and lifestyle changes. Dr. Richard Brouse is also an author, lecturer, and health educator. This presentation that you are about to hear was recorded in front of a live audience. The information presented here is for educational use and does not take the place of a physician's care. For specific health concerns, consult your physician. For further information on other topics in our educational library, call 503-654-3225 or email at information@healthedcorp.com. Thank you.
We are in for an exciting presentation tonight on thyroid health. I discovered some things that I really wasn't aware of. Some of them are kind of scary. Anyway, good evening, I'm Dr. Brouse, and I want to welcome you to our presentation tonight on the 2007 upgrade on thyroid health. As you know, the thyroid gland is a very, very unusual gland. It can be overactive or underactive, and in some conditions it can do both. The thyroid gland itself is taken for granted until something goes wrong. And actually tonight we're going to see that the thyroid gland is a member of the endocrine system. It helps to regulate body temperature by setting the rate at which all the cells of the body burn fuel to make energy. Heat production, as well as digestion, memory, everything else, indirectly is controlled by thyroid. The energy that you and I make at night to keep our bodies warm is a result of basal metabolic rate set by the thyroid to tell the liver how many calories per hour to burn. And when we rest, our bodies go back to that basal metabolic rate, and when we get active, our physiological activities, muscle mass primarily, takes over, and we have adrenal input into the energy system. But usually the enthusiasm to get us going comes from the thyroid gland. We notice that body weight is primarily controlled by thyroid. Thyroid has a direct input on fat as well as muscle and protein metabolism. We're also going to discover that it has a lot to do with the regulation of our growth rate. It's interesting to note that while most adults reach their the optimum height by the time they're 15, men and women, by the time they're 15, Michael Jordan didn't stop growing until he was over 21. And when he was a freshman in college, he was the shortest one on the team, and he was cut the first time because he was too small. So he finished out at about 6'5" when he was 23 years old. And growth rates vary with people, and so do the rate at which we use protein and build muscle. Actually, the reproductive system is under the control of the thyroid gland also, indirectly, because energy for manufacture of ova and sperm is under the direct control of our basal metabolic rate. And people who have weak thyroid quite often have difficulty conceiving. Regulation of our nervous system, the rate at which the nerves themselves conduct electrical signals, and the rate at which the nerves manufacture energy to process information, is all under the regulation of the thyroid gland. The thyroid gland is what we call a secondary endocrine gland, meaning it takes orders from the other endocrine glands. It does not make any decisions on its own. It does not have a neurological input. The adrenal glands have a nerve supply. They can respond, and we can jump over buildings that we didn't think we could make. But the thyroid gland is not controlled by the nervous system directly. It is controlled by other glands, particularly the adrenal glands through the control of a hormone called, or the pituitary gland through a hormone called thyroid stimulating hormone. And this gland, the pituitary, is in turn regulated by a gland called the hypothalamus. And the hypothalamus is a gland that sits just above the pituitary that regulates our temperature, the rate at which we're burning fuel, how much differential there is between the inside of our body temperature and the surface of our skin. So we can tell how fast we're losing energy through our skin based upon how cold it is outside. And so the thyroid gets the information from the pituitary, which gets the information from the hypothalamus. Kind of an interesting little chain of events that take place. The adrenal glands are inversely related with the thyroid. The more you rely upon adrenal activity to get you through the day, the more your thyroid gland is going to be suppressed. So if you use stimulants, if you use music, if you use caffeine, if you use sugar that stimulate adrenal activity, in reality, you are suppressing your thyroid. I tell people it's kind of like your car. When you get started in the morning, you start your automobile, you start the engine, you push the gas pedal down to the floor, and you accelerate. That's your adrenal gland. As soon as you get to cruising speed, you turn on cruise control. That's your thyroid. And the thyroid regulates the amount of energy you burn during the majority of the activities during the day. But if you come to a hill, you have to push the gas pedal again, and you have to accelerate and burn more fuel in order to get over that hump in the day. And that's where we can kick in the adrenals during the day and override that thyroid. After a period of time, the thyroid starts to reduce its contribution. And so when we have times of rest and we're not making adrenal stimulation, the thyroid is already in a subdued state. And so many people have what is called functional hypothyroidism because they have over adrenal compensation. I hope this makes sense, but just think of it. The more you push your gas pedal, the less often you use cruise control. And so you get less miles per gallon. You burn yourself out. You use up B vitamins. You use up adrenaline. You use up a tremendous amount of reserves that you normally would not be doing. The thyroid gland also activates the iodine molecule. We call the iodide ion for body use. Now, this is a very important thing because we've known for hundreds of years, several hundred years, that seafood and iodine, Hippocrates observed that, actually helps to treat and correct goiter. Hippocrates noticed that feeding shellfish to people with an enlarged goiter in their throat would cause the goiter to shrink. He knew something was in the seafood that wasn't in terrestrial animals, and he actually reported that. But what we began to learn recently is that iodine is carried throughout the entire body and is necessary for thyroid hormone to be absorbed and used in the rest of the body. And so the thyroid gland is really a director of how iodine is being used in the rest of the body. We know that the thyroid gland makes a hormone called thyroxin that requires iodine in order for it to be active. But it also has to have iodine in the tissue for iodine to be effective. Now, when we do a thyroid examination, we check the neck, the base of the neck, because this is the place where the thyroid resides. There are four lobes. There is an inferior and superior portion of the thyroid gland on both the right and the left side. So there are really four parts to the thyroid gland. Usually, one part is just under the collarbone. The inferior borders of the thyroid are just under the collarbone, and two, the superior portions are above the collarbone. We palpate that area, look for tenderness, enlargement. We have people swallow while we're palpating the thyroid gland to see if, in fact, we can get a feel of the size of the thyroid gland. And this is very, very important portion of the physical exam. We note, ask the person if they have a hoarseness to their voice, and they may not realize it, but an enlarged thyroid will cause a change in the pitch of the voice. And when you take a voice scan of the person, you can see actual scratchy hoarseness to their voice because of enlargement of their thyroid. Okay, thyroid hormones. Primarily, the main one is a triiodothyronine, which is called thyroxin, T4. This is a slow-acting thyroid hormone. We make thyroxin and release it when we are in the rest phase. Early in the morning, about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, We start to release thyroid, and that starts to wake our system up. Our digestion, we start feeling hunger, we start moving, we start feeling warmer usually in the morning if our thyroid is working as it should. Then we release the thyroxine, and it goes out into the tissue and taken up by the cells of the body and converted into a substance called triiodothyronine, T3. T3 is fast-acting. It causes the cells to increase their metabolic rate very, very quickly. So we release this hormone when we, let's say we go out into the cold weather, and suddenly we get a little rush that it's cold outside, and we start to shiver. And in the meantime, our body starts to convert T4, the slow-acting thyroid hormone, into T3, which is the fast-acting thyroid hormone. It's amazing phenomenal. The ability to adapt to temperature is occurring at a tissue level rather than at a higher nervous system level. Then we have an important hormone called calcitonin. Calcitonin is a hormone that allows us to absorb calcium from our digestive tract. It's not quite as effective as vitamin D. But in areas where there is very little sunshine and people are not able to get enough vitamin D, calcitonin reserves in a healthy person can be enough to help them hold on to calcium longer than they normally would. Increasing age results in decreased production of all hormones of the body. And there are fibrotic changes in the thyroid gland and shrinkage. Relative amounts of T4, however, remain the same in the tissue due to the decreased usage of the hormone. Usually we burn less calories as we get older, so we don't need as viable of a thyroid. In other words, as the thyroid begins to slow down and atrophy and shrink as we get older, so does our need for calories, because by then we have younger people to lift the heavy objects and to do the running for us. That's if we've planned ahead. Otherwise, we find that our energy reserves go down very, very quickly. Now, the regulation of thyroid hormone, again, in summary, is that it starts out with a neurological input. It is chilly outside. It is dark outside. It is warm outside. That neurological input to our brain causes the hypothalamus to release thyroxine release factor. And this thyroxine release factor goes from the hypothalamus to the pituitary, where it tells the pituitary, will you please wake the thyroid up? So the pituitary releases the thyroid stimulating hormone, which goes down to the thyroid gland, and the thyroid kicks out T4 thyroxine, T3, and then a reflex T3, which is a very interesting intermediate compound. That gets fed back to the central nervous system. The body notices it, and we have what's called a negative feedback loop. In other words, the more thyroxine and thyroid hormone we make, the faster our metabolism, the more the nervous system recognizes it, so it self-regulates. It slows itself down. And this balance is going on continuously, speeding up in the morning, slowing down as the day goes on. So by evening, like now when the sun's going down and it's getting late, we should start feeling relaxed and start thinking about finding a warm, comfortable place to curl up for the night. And that's a normal function. Changes in temperature, even barometric pressure, hunger, danger, causes stimulation of the thyroid pathway. It will affect it. Almost anything from an outside stimulus will eventually affect the thyroid gland. Adrenal feedback from stress is probably one of the greatest features, though. And I mentioned that when you rely on your adrenals to bail you out all day long, you're going to be exhausted at the end of the day. And don't be surprised if you experience what is called functional hypothyroidism. What do I mean by that? Functional hypothyroidism is where the gland is working perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with the gland, but it's such a small player because the adrenals have got front stage. The adrenals are the fast stop and start. They're like the drag racer with a parachute to slow them down at the end of the race. And the thyroid is more like the sedan with cruise control. Big, big difference in the way that it's used. The iodine cycle. Iodine is still being researched. And I was amazed to see how much information is coming out on iodine metabolism. Let me say it this way. The United States has one of the lowest recommended daily intakes of iodine in the world. Japan recommends 10 times the amount of iodine that we do. Their government, Food and Drug Administration, recommends 10 times more iodine than we do. And it's because the research that has gone on iodine has not been done in the United States in the last probably 25 years. More research has gone on in Japan and other parts of Europe, and you'll see why. But this whole mechanism of how iodine is taken up and converted and handled is very, very significant. Let me just say that iodine is a member of a group of elements called halogens. And the halogens include chlorine, fluorine, bromide, and iodine. Iodine is the only one that has a nutritional factor in the human body. All of the others have toxicity in very low levels. Okay? Iodine has a very high tolerance. It is still potentially toxic. I mean, water is potentially toxic. But iodine is much less toxic in terms of its acceptable, allowable levels. And when we look at this pathway, we can see that the liver is involved, the bowel is involved, we pass excessive iodine through our kidneys, we get rid of it through our stool, any excess, but there is a lot of regulatory chemistry that's going on. Thyroid test. How can you tell if you have enough thyroid? Well, and if your thyroid's working right. Well, one of the best ways is to do a morning temperature before you get out of bed. I have my patients keep track of their temperature by putting a thermometer next to their alarm clock. When the alarm clock goes off, before they jump up and go to the bathroom, they put the thermometer either under their arm or in their mouth, and they wait and take their temperature and record it for 30 days. And there is normal fluctuation in the thyroid temperature, depending on what time you got to bed the night before, what kind of food you ate, many little factors. But overall, the average temperature should be above 97.6. And as you can see the little yellow line here, the average temperature should be above that, and it will fluctuate back and forth, maybe a degree. Now, this would be obviously a male or a non-menstruating and non-ovulating woman, because women will get a little rise of about 0.5 to 1 degree of extra temperature around ovulation. So you need to do a full month in order to really get a good indication of what's going on. If there are frequent daily readings, we'll answer questions. The readings are below 97.6 degrees, we have what is called a functional hypothyroidism. And we have to look further to find the cause. Most people, however, will notice that their fluctuation is probably less than 0.3 degree. If frequent daily readings reach above 99.2 degrees, we check for hyperthyroidism or infection. So high temperatures early in the morning can be an indication of an opposite and opposing response going on. And this can be very, very important when you want to know why you're losing weight, gaining weight, can't sleep, can't wake up, having allergies, having indigestion, having constipation, having diarrhea. All of those factors can be related to the way that the thyroid is trying to read what's going on in the rest of the body. Types of thyroid disorders. Very quickly, the most common problem that goes back to antiquity is called a thyroid goiter. An enlargement of the thyroid gland, but actually no symptoms. Weight isn't affected, energy isn't affected, the gland is enlarged because of deficiencies of iodine. And this is probably one of the most obvious conditions that has been recorded down through history, is what we call a simple goiter. Silent thyroiditis, you can have a hypothyroid effect, and then all of a sudden it goes hypo and then hyper. This is due to autoimmune disease, and it can be due to an allergic reaction or a response to a virus that actually sets the immune system off and causes an attack on the thyroid itself. And it may not attack the gland, it may attack the hormone once it's released into the system. Graves' disease is a hyperthyroidism, which can be very fatal, very, very dangerous. And also Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which we see in young people. Women are more prone to autoimmune thyroid disorders than men by about 8 to 1, much more common in women. Thyroid cancers will show up in people who have no symptoms at all. There will be no change in thyroid hormone output. They simply get a tumor and it begins to go cancerous. And we're going to talk about this because this is where a lot of new research is going on. Why are we having a rapid increase in the number of thyroid cancers? And we're going to discuss that. Radiation-induced cancer, back in the 50s, people who had acne were getting x-rays to their face and their upper neck. And they irradiated their thyroid with radiation, and we found a great number of people who developed thyroid cancer. And they ended up having their thyroid glands removed or irradiation with radioactive iodine, which we'll talk about later. Hypothyroidism. 10% of the U.S. population has hypothyroidism. It can be a primary disease if there is insufficient thyroid hormone that is put out in the body. If they're not making enough T4, it's called primary hypothyroidism. And these are people who actually benefit from taking some thyroid hormone. Now, it may have been caused from an infection, an iodine deficiency, drugs such as lithium that is given for bipolarism, phenylthyrourea, which is used for suppressing thyroid symptoms, or Hashimoto's disease. Early stage can be actually the over-treatment of many problems lead to a long-term primary hypothyroidism. Secondary hypothyroidism comes about because of pituitary insufficiency, and this is where I find in a lot of women who are perimenopausal, 30s and 40s, they will be people who just simply have fatigue. They often have a history of using birth control pills in their early teens and 20s, and by the time they're in their late 30s or 40s, their pituitary gland just fails to put out TSH. I've had people with both low T4 and low TSH, and the endocrinologists scratch their head and don't understand it. So usually they will only measure one test. They do TSH. If you get a lab profile from your doctor, the only test they will do is TSH. They don't like to do both of them, because if both of them are low, that means that you've got a pituitary problem, and how are they going to treat a pituitary problem? They do not give TSH. It is not a therapeutic hormone, much, much too delicate. Over-medication with thyroid can cause heart disease, permanent, irreparable heart disease. So secondary thyroid problems are often over-treated or mistreated or completely ignored. But then in a rarer case, we have a tertiary disease, which is the hypothalamus itself. People who have lead poisoning, toxic metals, or chemical poisoning will have a hypothalamus that doesn't respond as it should, and they are cold all the time. And no matter what they take, they do not seem to respond. So quite often we have to send them to a warmer climate. I'm serious. We've had some people that could not tolerate the winters. A lot of elderly people go south because it puts less stress on their thyroid in the winter, very simply. 85% of the cases of hypothyroidism are found in women and 15% in men. And again, we think it has to do with some endocrine problems and the possibility of autoimmune reactions affecting more than people than we realize. Hypothyroidism is very common. It's a result of either an underproduction of thyroid hormone, a failure of the pituitary to make TSH, or a blockage of thyroid hormone at the tissue sites due to competitive chemicals. If you're working in a lead refinery factory, or if you work in photographic developing equipment and use the chemicals, you very well can have a functional thyroid problem because of the chemical interferences. Some of these chemicals are very specific to interfere with thyroid uptake. Poor calcium absorption. You'll notice that people who just simply can't get enough calcium, they are craving calcium, they have osteoporosis, they have muscle cramps at night, quite often they will have hypothyroidism. And then the biggest one is iodine deficiency, and the literature just shows that people who have a low thyroid, functional thyroid, quite often will have fibrocystic breast or ovarian cystic disease. And I have checked my records, and the first eight that I found all had low thyroid and fibrocystic breasts. So this is something that we really didn't realize. It's not a surgical procedure that's needed, but it's actually an iodine deficiency problem. Symptoms of hypothyroidism. Now here's what's interesting. You can change a person's symptoms immediately by giving him thyroid hormone. As a matter of fact, we said that 10% of the population has hypothyroidism. I would say in reality, more than 50% of the population, if they were given thyroid hormone, would have an improvement in their health. They would have less sweating. People who sweat abnormally, thyroid problem. Dry skin, thyroid problem. Weight increase, obviously, thyroid problem. Constipation, thyroid problem. Hoarseness of their voice. Paresthesias, little pains or changes in sensitivity in their legs and feet and hands and arms. Deafness, slow movements, their reflexes decrease. Coarse skin, cold skin, periorbital puffiness. The eyes get puffy. You ever see people who look like they need to go to bed? More rest. Slowing of the ankle jerk. When we do reflexes, we check the ankle, not the knee, but the ankle. And in actuality, very low and slow jerk to the ankle is an indication of low thyroid. And a decreased pulse rate, slow pulse rate. When they sit down, their system is exhausted. Give them thyroid and they all feel better. Okay, there we go. Causes of hypothyroidism. Here we see a picture of a child whose mother was iodine deficient, and it actually leads to a condition called cretinism if it is too severe, and an irreversible problem called myxedema, which is a very severe deficiency of thyroid in a woman. Her child is going to be born with a tendency towards not only slow learning capabilities, but actually retardation. And iodine deficiency leads to severe neurological and brain development. Drug side effects such as lithium and many other drugs do have an effect on thyroid. Chemotherapy, for instance, changes thyroid function. Heavy metal toxicity, arsenic is a real common one in children. Amino acid deficiency, thyroxine is a starting amino acid for making thyroid hormone. If a child is protein deficient, they will have functional hypothyroidism. Post-viral infections following measles, mumps, chickenpox, flu, even shingles from the chickenpox virus a second time around as an adult, it can end up with hypothyroidism. And then goiter, which we know is the iodine deficiency. Let's talk a little more about iodine. The relationship between iodine and the thyroid is very complex. We know that iodine can be potentially toxic. And 150 years ago, iodine was dissolved in alcohol because it is much more soluble in alcohol and used as a tincture to treat wounds. The problem was not only would it kill germs, but it also would be absorbed and cause toxicity. Elemental iodine is a poison. Now, the iodide compound itself is needed by the thyroid. So imagine taking iodine and reacting it with a mineral to make a potassium iodide, and the body can use that. It's not toxic. It recognizes it as a nutrient. Iodine is severe and prolonged iodine deficiency can potentially lead to serious types of hypothyroidism, such as the myxedema or cretinism that we talked about with children. And it doesn't show up in the adults as much as it does developing children. It's estimated that 1 in 500 million people living in 118 countries around the world are iodine deficient. So 500 million people have got functional hypothyroidism due to iodine deficiency. Now, how can you tell what your iodine status is? You can't just do a simple blood test because iodine is attached to the tissue. What you can measure is a test kind of, it's called the resorption or the excretion test. How much of iodine is absorbed from a challenge, and we want to know how well the body is using and storing iodine. We do this by measuring the total urine output for 24 hours after giving a person 50 milligrams dose of iodine. 50 milligrams is a very tiny amount. And the potassium iodide then shows up in the blood, in the urine. The amount of iodine that is in the urine is inversely proportional to the tissue level. In other words, the more iodine that shows up in the urine, the better the status of the tissue. So you want to see the body excrete more iodine. If all of the parking spots are full, there'll be no place to put the iodine in the tissue, so it ends up in the urine. And it is very well correlated in a linear way. The more that's excreted in the urine, the more satisfied the body is with iodine. So if you notice, let's say a 50 milligram intake of iodine forms only 25 milligrams ending up in the urine, you say there's 50% saturation. And the person still needs iodine. They are iodine deficient. And we do this test quite often. It's one of the most accurate ways of dosing and determining if a person's iodine status is adequate. Why do we want to do that? Well, because iodine does more than just thyroid function. This is one of the most interesting little charts that I ran across, and it's simply a chart of where the incidence of thyroid cancer correlates with iodine deficiency. Notice that the central United States and the northern states, particularly in red, have a much higher incidence of thyroid cancer. Why is this so? It wasn't this way 25 years ago. What we believe is happening is that radioactive fallout from all of the countries that are doing nuclear testing is producing radioactive iodine-131 in the air. It is floating worldwide, and people who do not have nutrient levels of iodine adequate will absorb the radioactive iodine-131 and end up with thyroid cancer. And in reality, that is what's happening. The incidence, for instance, if you live in Florida or in Yuma, Arizona, you have 0.1% the risk of having cancer of the thyroid compared to living in Bozeman, Montana. And it has to do with the daily exposure to iodine. Since we have reduced the amount of salt intake because of high blood pressure, we've undone the advantage of having iodized salt. That's no longer an option. Most people do not use salt like they did and like it was originally intended for. So we're seeing people that are more iodine deficient and having suboptimum thyroid function. So doing a thyroid uptake test and the excretion test is really the only accurate way to find out, do they have adequate iodine stores? Treatment of hypothyroidism. Here is a Chernobyl thyroid cancer victim. She had her thyroid removed surgically. And after Chernobyl fallout, there were more people with thyroid cancer across Europe than ever before. Very interestingly, a country that was downwind of the thyroid, fallout, that did not suffer from thyroid cancer was Japan. They learned from Hiroshima and Nagasaki to saturate their body with iodine. And it's interesting that when Chernobyl blew along the Pacific Rim, you could not buy an iodine supplement. They were completely sold out. The Oriental people knew that when there is radioactive fallout, take more iodine to block the iodine-131 from being absorbed in their thyroid. They did not get the cancer, their neighbors did. So proteins such as thyroxine get enough protein. Protein deficiency can lead to hypothyroidism. Lugol's iodine, Dr. Lugol, the French physician, back in 1829 figured out that if you used potassium iodide and kelp, and you could give like 7 milligrams a day, you could use alfalfa tablets, 10 or more per day, you would get enough iodine to actually prevent the deficiency of iodine. Identify and control allergies. Allergies can have a dramatic effect on thyroid function. Use a doctor-directed thyroid support in the morning. Raw, whole sheep thyroid is what we recommend therapeutically for a period of time. until we can detoxify the person, until we can get their antibody levels back to normal from food allergies, or until we can get the autoimmune system self-regulating much better. Get that temperature where it belongs, above 97.6 and below 99.2. B-complex, vita C, vita E, and zinc, all of those very important for the treatment of hypothyroidism. Now, what about hyperthyroidism? It's much less common. It's due to an overproduction of thyroid hormones. It's kind of like having your gas pedal stuck. If you've ever had that happen, it's a very frightening experience. And this can come about from viral or bacterial side effects that can trigger the immune system to kind of kick the thyroid into overdrive. It continues to secrete thyroid hormone 24 hours a day, and the person's heart rate, their temperature, their eyes tend to bulge, they're feeling desperate, very, very depressed, and feel in a state of panic much of the time because of that response. Toxic goiter can cause an overactive nodule within the gland. This is called Plummer syndrome, and it's due to an actual toxic goiter. Toxic goiter meaning it's releasing thyroid hormone. Remember, a simple goiter does not release thyroid hormone. It's due to deficiency of iodine. Graves' disease is a diffuse toxic goiter where there are little specks, little spots throughout the thyroid. Instead of one lump that's producing a lot of it, it's small amounts. And in that case, Graves' disease usually requires the removal of the gland itself. Symptoms of hypothyroidism, nervousness and irritability, increased perspiration, insomnia, not being able to sleep or sleep for very long, weakness and fatigue, hair and weight loss after a period of time, feeling exhausted but not being able to rest. We've also included that as part of the symptoms of overactive adrenals, which quite often can be give the same symptoms. Hand tremors, intolerance to heat, hot weather really causes an irritation to these people. Rapid heartbeat, when you get up above 88 beats per minute when you're resting, think about the thyroid being overstimulated or the adrenal, and of course the protruding eyeballs. You should be able to look at a person and not see white all the way around the color portion of their eye, the orbit. If you can see white all the way around their eyes, it's not that they're just scared out of their wits. It's actually that there is pressure pushing their eyes outward, and it's due to high blood pressure in the back of the eye orbit itself. Separation of finger and toenails. You start having the nails coming off of the fingers, and it's due to dryness of the skin and overstimulation of the circulation. Causes of hyperthyroidism, thyroid tumor, T3 or T4 will be high, Graves' disease, cancer. Toxic iodine can be a cause. Now, a lot of times doctors will classically see hyperthyroidism and say, oh, don't take any iodine. But there are a lot of cases where iodine is the treatment for overactive thyroid. It's just that you have to be much more careful and you have to know what you're doing. Pituitary tumors, the TSH can be being secreted in high quantities. And in that case, you might find someone that is in kind of overdrive. They don't sleep. They've got hyperthyroidism. And their pituitary is overacting. Toxic metals and cancer quite often will have this cause, this effect. Hypothalamus, the tertiary type of hyperthyroidism. Nutrient deficiencies such as B vitamins, where people do not feel comfortable with their environment. They're either overly hot, they're craving foods, they have dry red tongue, red mouth, red lips, and this is an indication of B vitamins that may be necessary to help regulate that hypothalamus and calm the thyroid down. Treatment of hyperthyroidism, multiple vitamin mineral supplements. The new Vitalizer, I think, will help a lot of people. For one reason, it has 150 micrograms of iodine in every pack. And the other reason is it has one of the best absorptions of the total B family of vitamins that we know of. So I think that's going to be a much better approach. B1, B2, and B6 seem to be the critical ones for thyroid regulation. Essential fatty acids, EPA and GLA, are essential for helping to regulate and buffer the storage and utilization of the hormone. Remember, These hormones are not water soluble. They have an oils component that has to be absorbed in an oil surface. Red blood cell membranes are one of the best transport systems for many of these hormones. They will attach to the membrane, the lipid layer of the membrane of red blood cells, and be transported throughout the body. Vitamin C, vitamin E, and lecithin, also necessary. And then the cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, soybeans, spinach, pears, peaches, rutabagas, turnips, cauliflower, kale, and mustard greens all have beneficial effects in reducing overactive thyroid. They've been used classically for hundreds of years and many times with amazing success. Whole thyroid tissue. Last resort, give someone whole thyroid tissue because the feedback mechanism to the hypothalamus and the pituitary will respond to this. And interestingly, most mammals, including cows, sheep, goats, will work for human thyroxin. It has the same benefit. Armor thyroid has been around for over 100 years, and it was made from Chicago stockyard cattle and pigs. Now, recently, a lot of doctors have gotten away from using Armour thyroid because it doesn't have the same concentration of the precursors for the hormones. Some of them have more than others, but more importantly, the chemicals, the toxic chemicals that are in the animals, sometimes will neutralize the benefits of the thyroid. So one batch may work well and the next batch does not work as well. And so thyroid hormone from Armour it's not receiving as good a report as it used to. Now, other types of glandular tissue from sheep thyroid from Australia and New Zealand are purer. They don't have the same concentration of thyroxin as pork, but they're much purer and most people tolerate them much better. So when I need to use some temporary thyroid tissue, I will use New Zealand or Australian sheep thyroid for a short period of time. Prevention of thyroid problems. Number one, avoid drugs. Preservatives and chemicals to the best of your ability. If you're not using Shackley Get Clean in your home, you're taking a risk for two reasons. Number one, most of the green ones on the market that are biodegradable don't clean well. And those that do clean well usually have additives in them that make them work. But basic H, basic G, basic L, the laundry, the H2, the entire Get Clean system is totally non-sensitizing to the endocrine system. Adequate rest. We live in a society of 24-hour shoppers, all-night work schedules, rotating shifts, and it's amazing we don't have more endocrine problems than we do. But that rest component is one of the things that I insist in people who are having thyroid and endocrine problems in other places. Optimum nutritional needs, including iodine. Measure iodine status. It should be one of the first things that's done when a person has a potential or a suspected thyroid problem, or when their laboratory profile shows a TSH or T4 or T3 or reflex T3 or T uptake being wrong. You should check iodine status. It is a vital test. It's one that we order on a regular basis for our patients, and we find most people are deficient in iodine. I have very few people that excrete 50 milligrams of iodine in 24 hours. They're absorbing a lot of it because they're starving for iodine. Moderate exercise. Try to get at least 20 to 40 minutes of strenuous exercise 3 to 5 times a week. Now, if you're having to run 20 miles to feel that you're getting your exercise, you're probably living on adrenaline. And that's going to burn out. That will run out eventually, and you will not be able to get the same benefit. Dr. Waddell used a term called positive addiction, where we make endorphins with extreme exercise. It's kind of like jumping out of a perfectly good airplane with a parachute just to get the feel, the rush of, woo, 126 mile an hour wind against your face and the earth coming fast, that adrenaline rush. Well, the same thing happens with people who work out 2 and 3 hours, 6 days a week to get to feel good. They cannot maintain it. Their adrenals give out and they end up having thyroid problems along the way. Reduce stress. Learn to say no. It's easily said, but it is not done. Those of you who are in a service business, those of you who are in a business where you help others and you're there to help them when they get into trouble and mistakes, your adrenals are going to be called upon. So you have to plan for time to get away and smell the roses. Avoid the viral, bacterial, and yeast infections. Keep your immune system up to par. Do not let your thyroid be vulnerable to the side effects of viruses and bacterial exotoxins and yeast infections, because all of them have an effect on the thyroid. Avoid unnecessary vaccinations. This is a big issue. The mercury that has been used in vaccinations for children is now being shown to be a cause for why Junior is overweight and obese, because of the effect that it has on the thyroid. Not just because he loves to run video games and takes a bus to school when it's only half a block away. Those reasons add up. But the big one is we're seeing there is a small but definitive fraction of children who do not do well. Their endocrine system begins to have problems after vaccination. Adults should do regular detoxification. Be on a regular detox program. Spring and fall is what we recommend. April and October, great months for doing a cleanse. Clean your liver, clean your digestive tract, clean your skin, saunas, soda baths, juice diets, Epsom salts and olive oil flushes for the liver. Cool down, chill out, and take it easy. In Europe, they shut down for the month of August. And they go to the Moorbads in Germany, and they soak in the mud baths. They get massages, go to steam rooms, soak in the Mediterranean Ocean. And then after August, they go back and hit it hard for 11 months. And they live longer than we do. And they have much less health problems than we do. And they have a very stable economy that's gone on for several thousand years, if I recall. So perhaps they know something that we've forgotten. References. There is many, many, many studies that have been done on thyroid, and new things are coming out all along. This iodine issue with prevention against thyroid cancer is one that we really should take seriously. The data is now coming in droves. And just using iodine supplementation to protect in the unlikely event of nuclear fallout, hey, it's happening right now. If you were to go outside with a Geiger counter and measure, well, actually it'd be a beta counter, and go out and measure, there is iodine-131 in the air. With North Korea and China and Pakistan and India doing nuclear testing, it's there, folks. And we need to do the prevention to take care of our thyroid. So I want to encourage you to apply these things. Talk with your natural doctor about proper testing before you have a problem. But do not forget that the thyroid gland is a slave. It is a servant. It doesn't make decisions. It is told what to do by other systems. So don't blame it on your thyroid. Thank you very much.